welcome one and all once again to Dual World In. Let's call this 60 and a half. We recorded a full episode last week, all you to find out at the end that the actual episode didn't record. So that is Austin to the nether realms of the internet for, well, I guess for the four of us who are here last week to actually hear.
Yeah.
Us. You know, like there was a bunch of news last week that we, you know, could talk about, but we're not going to really re-harp on that stuff. It's a week old. Some of it's 2 weeks old, based on how we do this show. We'll discuss one or two major announcements that I feel needs to be discussed on there, but the rest of it you can kind of find on the web or whatever, and I'm sure with this week being GDC, it will be buried out by anything anyhow. But joining us this week, we have Jason.
Hello.
We have Daniel.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, we have DJ.
Yo.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Has anybody been playing anything new recently?
No.
I swear, we all have such niche tastes that it's always going to be the same. Like, I'm assuming next week, Jason's going to be playing Mass Effect.
I actually have been this week. I picked up, Amazon had Soul Calibur finally discounted to $40, so
picked that up. And how is that?
So far, I mean, it's a fighting game, so it's going to take a little while for me to form a total opinion, but so far I am not, as a big Soul Calibur fan, I'm not very happy. They kind of, I mean, the big change was the, like, super system, which is a pretty cool addition, but then they did things like taking out the guard impact system, or, like, basically counters, or, like, not taking it out, but essentially, like, making it just way harder to use and not practical anymore. And not easy to do.
So they're doing the opposite of what most fighting games are doing. Instead of making it more, I don't want to say casual, but instead of making it more user-friendly, they're making it more, I guess, more skill-based?
Yeah, I don't know what their motivation for it was, because to me, Guard Impact was one of the main reasons why I liked Soul Calibur, because it created this balance to the game where, like, you couldn't get away with just doing cheap moves and cheap combos over and over, because if you were good enough to guard impact, it would completely neutralize that. And now I'm getting stuck being killed by cheap combos all the time because I have no counter for it. My biggest issue.
Maybe they were trying to balance it out where, because I used to have that problem with Dead or Alive, where I thought counters were more effective than actually being offensive, because you could pretty much counter everything with good timing in that game, so you didn't have to be on the offensive.
Yeah, that's where in Soul Calibur, there's a lot of the moves are just simply timing-based, where there's a lot of fake-outs, and, you know, there's unblockables and stuff. So that kind of stuff, I thought, did a good enough job of balancing the counter system. So that's my biggest issue so far. There's also other things like, my main character is Ivy, and they completely changed her moveset around, so that's not as big of a deal for every player, but for me personally, it's just making the learning curve of the game a lot harder. And and the other major beef I have is that they've taken a lot of the old characters and made clones of them. So it would be like if you had Smash Brothers and they made a sequel and there was no Mario, there was just Dr. Mario. So the moves are essentially the same, but the original character isn't there. And it does this weird thing of, like, I feel like it's part of their, you know, trying to expand their audience, but it's not like people who haven't played the old games still aren't going to know the moves, whereas it burns the people who play the old games because they don't identify instead of identifying with a character, it's just a moveset. I don't know, it's this weird, like, disparity. Because one of my second best character, Zhang Shua, totally butchered that name, but she has a clone in this game. So I know the moveset, but it's still, I don't know, it's different. The other positive thing I'll say before we move on is that the online, like, netcode seems really good. I haven't had any lag so far. And it's really easy to just keep playing match after match after match. So that's a good thing, I guess. We'll see. Pretty mixed bag.
Just real quick, what are your thoughts on, like, the story mode, if it has one?
It does have one. I haven't... actually touched the story mode yet. I've been just trying to catch up on the mechanics and trying to learn Ivy's new controls and stuff. So, but I've heard it's not that great and that it focuses on, it basically forces you to play Patroclus, who's a new character. That's the main character for this game, for the story. So I'll probably get to that this week. I want to do it before Mass Effect comes out, so I'll have updates on that soon.
Okay. If Adrian ever shows his face around here one day, I'd love to hear you two talk this discussion starts on story modes and fighting games, because I think I added them all week, but they keep on trying, so...
Yeah, the thing is... So my favorite Soul Calibur game is, 4, but I hated the story mode in that game. And generally, I don't think that fighting games need or should have story modes. The only thing they do is it does provide like a way to like a way that the game, you can use the game mechanics a little differently in an offline setting and have like a progression system. And I like the way Soul Calibur 2 did it, but I think it caused more problems. I mean, because in Soul Calibur 5, they're moving the story ahead 17 years, which is a lot of the reason for things like the clone characters. And I feel like if they're adjusting things like the roster to fit the story, it hurts the game more than it helps it. Because the story in a fighting game is bonus material, really. So that's how I feel. I don't know.
Okay.
I'll hopefully have a update on that by next week.
Well, it's also kind of curious, and it goes into something I'll talk about on the site this week if I get around to it, is that I'm also a huge fan of rushing games, which I think have the same issue, where I think the story modes in them are so goofy and over the top at times, but it is kind of mimicking what it's based off of. But it's like really hard to make them enjoyable and fun, but people put them in there because it's kind of expected. I'll get into that more if I ever finish WWE 12's one this week.
It's not that I do see their value, and I do like having an engaging offline mode, because, you know, you can only do versus battles and stuff so many times. But, well, I don't know. I mean, it shouldn't dictate the entire experience, I guess.
Yeah. Since DJ's here for the first time, what are you playing?
I've just been like going across between Battlefield 3 and Skate 2.
Did you say Skate 2?
Yeah.
Oh, that's old school.
And on H3.
I know, I was about to say, we even have a new extreme sport game out this week. We haven't had one of those in years.
I had that game.
Skate 3 came out in like 2010, so...
Like 2 years. I don't think anything... I mean, granted, if you count those Tony Hawk games like Ride and... what was the one that came out last year?
Shred,
yeah. So yes, those amazing Tony Hawk games, if you count those. which you can't remember the name of. And what about you, Daniel? What happened?
I've been playing Payday the Heist. It's a game that came out... last year sometime.
Is it on PC?
It's on PC and PS3.
Okay, and it was on PS3. I thought it was a PS3 exclusive.
Yeah, it's basically like Left 4 Dead Bank Robbery Edition. It's okay. It gets a bit frustrating when the game decides it's going to spawn 1,000 cops at you endlessly.
Now, does it do the Left 4 Dead thing where it has like an AI director?
No. It's the same thing all the time, really, and it can get a bit repetitive. There are like the minor details of the mission, they vary. Like you might have to order some person to some place to get them to unlock a door or something. But for the most part, it's wait for something, shoot cops, move here, wait for something else, shoot more cops, and the gunplay is not great. Let's just say this: if I hadn't have got it for free, it wouldn't be in my Steam library even after today. So
that's not very a grown impression. I actually wanted to try this game.
So it's a free weekend on Steam at the moment.
Yeah, it's a free weekend. I mean, try it out by all means, because it's not going to cost you anything to do so. But I personally wouldn't recommend it. I don't think it's worth the money.
Well, if it's free, I mean, there's no money in.
Well, yeah, but. Obviously, you have to pay for it after.
Yeah,
it's only free this weekend. So.
Yeah, but I mean, if I get to try it out, I have it. I mean, that's the whole point. That's why I've always been an advocate of demos. I think, you know, it helps people get an idea of what they want instead of just kind of blindly buying the game.
Yeah.
Okay. As for me, I haven't really been playing anything. I went back to Pokemon Black after the announcement, and I didn't realize that Pokemon Black and White doesn't have the journal system that was introduced in Diamond and Pearl.
I didn't really see any point in that myself.
I think it's a great idea because sometimes you, and this is what happened when I went back to Pokemon Black, is that if you haven't been playing the game, and in my case, about a year or so, you don't know where you are. It's kind of like, oh, you just did this, and this is where you need to go. I mean, granted, Pokemon's a fairly linear game, but it does give you some idea instead of just wandering around for like 10, 15 minutes trying to figure out where you are in the game. And even if you don't know based on the journal, you can still kind of go and find like a guide online and say like, okay, here's where you are, here's where you need to go. And I think it's something that helps if people do take extended breaks from games, which does happen from time to time. Aside from that,
at what point are you in Black and?
And that was my issue. I didn't know where I was.
Well, how many badges have you got? That's just
I had six. I found out I'm near. I was right near the seventh gym. I think the ice gym.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then I went around to explore because I was in the gym and I went and I could fight the people, but I realized I hadn't really been in the area because I didn't collect any of the Pokemon. So I assume what happened, and this is, I got to the Pokemon Center, I refilled my Pokemon's health and I turned off the game, and then like 12 months passed and here we are. So yeah, I mean, it's still Pokemon. And I guess that we're kind of going to news, and this was one of the things we talked about last week, but Nintendo did announce that Pokemon Black and White 2 will be coming out to the Nintendo DS this year. I think this year, what is it, June in Japan and sometime this fall in the West. And I do think it's an interesting idea, though as of right now, what they're revealing, I think they reveal that there's a third new Pokemon in this game.
Well, I think it's not really a new Pokemon, it's just a Pokemon that you'll actually be able to obtain now.
Okay, so, and it's kind of, what is it, Melody or something like that?
Meleta or something like that, it's not anything interesting. As those these sort of Pokemon tends to go, it's going to be a Pokemon you catch just for the sake of having it. And
yeah, it's kind of like most of the Pokemon. I mean, I like Black and White. I like what they were trying to do with it, but I added a Pokemon to signs, as I mentioned last weekend, because I started up the game and the first Pokemon in my rotation is a giant ice cream cone.
And you can sort of tell, you know, let's make a tentacle, but not make tentacle, because they've got to all be new Pokemon. And
yeah,
let's make Zubat, but it's not got to be Zubat. It's got to be something else. So it ended up being Woobat.
Yeah, that was kind of something kind of funny when playing Pokemon Black. Because you have like your Rattata, you have your Pidgey, you have those analogous Pokemon, but it's new Pokemon. But it's the same, you catch a rat, you catch a bird in your first, like, the first forest between your hometown and the first gym and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, it was nice with that. So yeah, I mean, this is why we didn't re-record last week. It's like, once you mention something, it's really hard to have a fresh new conversation on it. But they did announce a third Pokemon this week, so there's that. We also got official confirmation of Assassin's Creed 3, its setting, its release date, and some details. Assassin's Creed 3 will be set in Colonial America. I think it goes a little beyond that. I think it goes through the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, specifically the war, because the
red coats,
the continental flag that's on the box cover,
with
the circular stars and the that resembles kind of the modern flag, wasn't used until 2 years into the war. So
yeah, and that is, I just want to make a note of that. That is two sad things that came out this week. Is that one, a lot of Americans don't know the difference between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And two, is a lot of people didn't realize that the current American flag wasn't always the American flag. I mean, that basic design has remained the same. It's just a number of colors.
I should be surprised at that, but the sad thing is I'm not.
No, I'm not. There's a video on YouTube where like, they were asking people who's the current vice president.
Yeah.
And people didn't know.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, I've never been a news person or a history buff, but you would think you would know the basics
exactly
of your own country. It's something that I think they started teaching us in the third
in nation. In this country, our deputy prime minister doesn't know he's a deputy prime minister. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. I mean, there are some stuff in this country, and I don't want to go. I remember during the last election, I was at work when they would, and a lot of people don't know how the actual cards works. But I also think that's because it's a really antiquated system.
If from what I've been told about it is correct, is really, I don't.
We don't need a political podcast.
We don't need. It's just something that probably needs to be upgraded at some point. So yes, Assassin's Creed 3. Okay. Well, I would just say right off the bat, the setting really just kind of reignites my interest in this franchise. It's not a setting or a location or a time that's really done often, if ever, in video games. I don't know anything off the top of my head.
My roommate pointed out there was a Total War game set in this time period, so...
Yeah, but there's been a Total War game set in every time period, to be honest.
Yeah, so, and certainly, we can definitely say there's never been a game of the, as high of a profile as Assassin's Creed set in this time period.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why, because for the most part, a lot of the games that do historical periods tend to be first-person shooters, and I don't think a lot of people...
And all of them are turned into MMSs anyway?
I was going to say, I don't think a lot of people would be happy with the type of weapons you had back then. It takes
me a minute to reload?
And I've got to reload every time I shoot
it? One shot?
Yeah.
It's also the same reason we don't really see many World War One games. But yeah, the only thing I will say, I don't know if you've seen the screenshots, is the character really stands out in the setting, I think.
Well, the setting stands out, first of all, compared to older Assassin's Creed games.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we knew they were going to jump in time anyhow.
But I mean, specifically that the leaked screenshots are all set in nature.
Yeah, and I think that would be another interesting twist for the franchise. Instead of relying on heights and stuff, it's kind of going to be like Metal Gear Solid Assassin's Creed, where you depend on nature and your environment. But I also think because from what I heard, I don't know if you've seen the game in form of details, is it seems to be a game that's more focused on, I guess, just set pieces and time pieces. Like you'll be with Washington at the Battle of. Drawing a blank here. Valley Forge and stuff like that. So it would be like more like, well, granted, again, as we are in this week, a lot of people probably won't know what they're at. So that would go over a lot of people's heads.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that I saw not all the details from that leaked Game Informer story, but I saw that supposedly the game takes place over like 50 or so years, which is going to allow, or is it that long? Yeah, like it's going to start in the French and Indian War, aka the 7 Years War for non-Americans, and all the way through the revolution. So that would be cool. It would be a little bit different because, as far as I know, Assassin's Creed, I think 2 might have spanned like 10 years or something, but other than that, it's been like, it hasn't told really a long-term story. So,
well, not many games tell long
stories. Right. Not many games at all do, so.
It's also kind of neat, and they pointed this out, and I think this was an issue you had, is that like the Redcoats won't all be villains, just as Americans won't all be heroes.
Well, Thomas Jefferson's a Templar, so that should be very interesting how they pull that off, according to Assassin's Creed 2.
I haven't played Assassin's Creed since the first one.
Well, I think this would be an interesting one, because it still kind of has the Desmond story, which has been the backbone of the franchise. But I think being that it's such a clean break from the prior two, like, you know, Altair and Ezio's story eventually crossed over in Brotherhood, or Revelations, I should say.
Sort of.
So, I mean, I don't think they were hanging out together, but...
No, I know, and I know that's how they sold the game, but as someone who's recently completed Revelations, they didn't really... There's, like, a couple Altair parts, and... Nothing really happens for the most part, so.
Well, I don't want to spoil it. I have heard what happens at the end, and it does seem like it's kind of like, oh, this is what happened, and here's kind of like what's the ramifications of it in Ezio's time.
Yeah, it was like there was a cool moment at the end, but as far as the actual like the gameplay of the Altair parts, as well as what they narratively brought to the story. Not much there.
Okay. So yeah, we shall see. It's just an interesting setting, and I think it. I'm assuming. I hope this is the one for the Wii U. I also think this is a good thing for Nintendo, where if you kind of got something like Brotherhood or Revelations, where it's kind of dependent on having Assassin's Creed 2 or the games prior to it, this is kind of like a clean break, so they can kind of hope that they get find some type of audience with this game if this is the Assassin's Creed Ubisoft is bringing to the Wii U this year.
Yeah, I think the only thing is the main part of the story is still going to be the Desmond storyline. And
yeah,
at least in the last two games, they haven't done a great job of kind of summing up what happened in the past game. So I assume they'll try better since, consoles and...
Yeah, let's hope they do something like the comic book from Mass Effect or something.
Yeah, not it doesn't so even much need to be that because there's not really decisions.
I like the idea of, recapping story. I've said this before, and this is kind of my one issue with HD remakes, is that HD remakes are usually divorced of the games that they kind of support. And God of War Collection came out right before God of War 3. That made sense. So, Jack and Dexter, there's no game tied in with that. It's just like, we haven't had this generation. So if it's kind of like, movies do this. If a movie's coming out, here's the best of, here's like the first two Nolan Batman films in one package. You can watch these and then go see the new one. If video games did that, I'd have no problem with it, because I do think it would be nice. But right now, it's just kind of like, we'll put these games out and we don't really have any matter as to what's coming in the future for the franchise. So there's that. Anything else about Assassin's Creed 3?
No, I don't really have any interest in the series, so...
Yeah,
I'm really excited, and like you, I'm really excited about the setting, and a little nervous at how, the urban climbing stuff will translate, but, definitely excited to see what they do.
I don't think it's as happy a setting for them, though. That's just kind of, the start point. Shh, don't tell them.
Oh, yeah. No, it's funny. I asked a couple people, including Daniel, on Twitter this week, what the British perspective on the American Revolution was. And the consensus
as
answer
far
was
as
kind
we
of
know,
just like,
it doesn't
what
exist.
Was that? Yeah, and I had a quick anecdote. Like, a friend of mine studied in Leeds last year, and he asked a similar question, and his British friends were also like, what was that? What happened?
It reminds me of that Family Guy thing where they go to Germany and then they skip over 30 years of the history and everybody had tea and pie and everybody was happy.
Yeah.
So they say history's written by the winners, but
to be fair, for Britain, the revolution was just, a minor
thing. It's more part of that.
Whereas for us, it was literally the defining moment of our country, so...
Yes, you would think so, but not if it's snowing, so...
That's a different discussion, but...
Yeah, I wonder what they think they celebrate on the 4th of July, which I also find that people don't know the actual meaning behind, but again, that's a subject for another day. We got news that BioShock will be coming out October 19th of this year, BioShock Infinite, which really just kind of jam-packs this October, November. Well, okay, every October, November is jam-packed, but, I mean, in recent weeks, we've had Borderlands 2 comes out in, is it September?
September.
Yep.
September, we have Assassin's Creed October 30th. You can pencil in Call of Duty for the second Tuesday in November.
Yeah.
I don't even think they need to announce it. Medal of Honor Warfighters in there. Resident Evil 6 is, I think, November 11th. And we still, Halo 4 is out. I guess the Last of Us is out. Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo still have time to announce their major games for this year. We have Pokemon Black and White 2.
Well, Nintendo, for sure, because they have a whole system to launch.
They have traditionally, in the last 4 or 5 years, they don't announce their major title until E3 for some odd reason. There's a lot of titles yet to come, and it's already looking like it's going to be a really hectic year for people's wallets. Which, of course, gets the other problem, where there's nothing after March, except for Max Payne 3.
There's Max Payne 3 in May, Darksiders 2 in June.
Yeah, you got two games in the next 6 months.
Hang on. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's not going to be nice. We're going to have the same issue where some people don't end up selling well and they have barely aching.
But then if Rockstar released Grand Theft Auto in July.
That's not going to happen, though.
Yeah, no, but it should. Oh, Transformers, Fall of Cybertron in May.
I don't think that's going to be a big game, but we shall see. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a decent year. And, you know,
Ghost Recon.
Yeah, okay, I'm not betting on Ghost Recon until we actually get that in stores, because I've been given several...
That's been vaporware. That's vaporware.
So, it exists when it's in stores, not when Ubisoft says they have a release date for it. It's kind of like they...
Remember that summer 2010 beta that we had? No, me neither.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's got some time to go. But yeah, speaking of, next week is GDC, and we've already heard that Sony is set to announce Vita games, I think Friday? They're doing some type of webcast where they're going to announce new and exciting Vita games, and they kind of need it.
I think this is great, because you had the launch and the hype around the launch, and obviously at launch everyone's going to focus on the launch games. Now we're a couple of weeks removed, we're in that stage where people are kind of like, what's next? We know Resistance is coming, but other than that, like, what's really on the horizon? And this will be a good thing for them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, and I don't want to say Sony's copying them, and I don't want, but it's kind of like what Nintendo does with the Nintendo Direct, where it's like, oh, here's the next 3 or 4 months in 3DS games, and, you know, the one Wii game we actually released every now and then. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, because what happens, a lot of this industry is kind of centered around these big conventions. So GDC, then you won't get anything till E3, and then after E3, it's like GamesCon and PAX Prime, and then Tokyo Game Show, and then it's like 6 months of nothing. I guess you announce something at the VGAs. So, you know, it's nice. And yes, Vita does kind of need that kick in the ass where people are like, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, it's coming, it's not in our show notes, but I think Sony announced this week that Vita, I think, sold 1.2 million units worldwide. And
was it sold or shipped?
Sold.
I think
it was sold.
I think sold? It was sold. Okay.
They usually cite ship numbers.
It's neither here nor there. That's a whole other discussion with Sony numbers. But yeah, it's 1.2 million, which, again, seems decent on paper, except when you take out like half of that for Japan for 2 months. Then you kind of have 600,000 across like several territories and stuff like that. But they did have these, I think their software ratio is like 1.85 per console, which is a good number as a launch system. I think the 3DS was under 1. But they do kind of need games because, it has a really decent launch lineup, but I honestly don't know what's down the pipe for them. I mean, there's always, you know, there's Call of Duty, there's the BioShock, but we haven't seen or heard anything about those since they were announced.
They may not be out for another year.
Well, the Call of Duty will be.
Well, yeah.
But it'll be, you know, Black Ops 2 or whatever.
Hypothetically,
come on.
It's not going
to be an exclusive title.
Well, and this is actually something I wanted to write about on the site this week, and maybe I'll get around to this. Like, there's something like 50-some-odd articles on the site's draft board that I haven't finished yet.
Yeah, me too. I have a bunch, too.
But, the Call of Duty Vita, I think, is in a really awkward position. I know a lot of people want it to do well so that the Vita does well. But if it's an exclusive game, it defeats the purpose, because then you don't have that cross-platform play between it and the PS3. But if it's just the HD version downsized to Vita, then you have to kind of convince people to buy it twice.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
the fanbase will do that, though.
They would be very wise to make it cross-play compatible with the PS3 version, though.
Yeah, and even if they do kind of convince people...
Right, they would still have problems, that seems
you'd
like
have
a...
You factor in that the Xbox is the predominant Call of Duty, so even then you're kind of selling to like 40% of the user base, and then you have to hope that like 50% of that user base buys your game and your system.
But still 40% of like 25 million.
Yeah, I guess. We don't do the math here. We don't have the time for it. But yeah, I do think it has possibilities, but I do think it's probably going to end up like the GTA stories on the PSP, where it's like a mainstream game that has appeal, but it just doesn't sell in the handheld.
Yeah. It, It's possible.
Yeah, so there's that. What else do we have? Sony, this is a rumor Jason wanted to talk about. Sony may be abandoning the cell processor for the PlayStation 4.
This is an interesting one, actually. Because I saw this, and I was actually quite interested that, first of all, you know, so Sony was like, oh yeah, this is a completely new architecture, it's really powerful, and it's, you know, and something about how, you know, 5 years down the line when we're just finishing, or no, five years, like 10 years down the line when we're just finishing, developers still won't have figured it out. I don't see how that's a good thing at all.
Right.
I think for their thinking, it was kind of like, oh, you know what, this is kind of a way so that the potential of the system's not tapped out in the first year or so. But yeah, it is a thing where people still have issues developing with this console.
I mean, it's less of a problem. Some of the more technical articles out there, like Eurogamer have a whole section dedicated to like technical analysis of games. You can tell the developers are really getting there, and they're really putting in the effort for PS3 versions of games, but it's just a fact that they shouldn't really have to.
Yeah, a funny anecdote was when this story broke this week, I follow a bunch of developers on Twitter, and so many of them were just like, thank God that Sony's going to ditch the cell, or like, you just heard a million game developers scream in joy, or stuff like that. It was just funny.
Yeah, and it makes sense that if you kind of, because, you know, that was one of the issues, is that on paper, the PS3 is a much more powerful console than the 360.
Well,
but time and time again, we've seen, I mean, I don't think there's ever been a case that said the 360 is, it's comparable, of course, because we've had this generation. But on
right,
paper,
but I think it seems like the difference is less than that of between the PS2 and original Xbox, even. So,
well, I mean, powerful, but
practical purposes, it doesn't mean much.
Yeah, and I think this is something I also mentioned. I think this is an issue that the Nintendo is going to have to overcome this year, where even if the Wii is more powerful than PS3 and the 360, I really think it's going to need like a really noticeable jump for people, where if it's just like, you know, like a lot of people, I can't tell the difference between a PS3 and a 360 game. And there are differences. There's websites dedicated to these things.
Well, a lot of the times the PS3 version's worse because they port it over and then they run into problems with that unique architecture. But that's a whole other issue.
Like Ghostbusters, for example, when that came out, there was a huge difference when it came out.
Bayonetta's in the final example where it runs like crap on the PS3. I had to suffer through that. I've heard the same thing about, the frame rate drops and this, screen sharing.
Well, you don't need any better example than the orange box.
That was going to be my other example, but that was also slightly different because Valve didn't port that. So it's that.
Well,
you know,
it's mainly because the Source Engine wasn't designed for the architecture at all. So.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's why Portal 2 on the PS3 was such a big deal.
Yeah,
I think, you know, there's a whole different beast when you have something ported by a different studio altogether. But yeah, let's not talk about the orange box on PS3. It benefits Sony, it benefits developers if all three kind of have similar architects, so you don't have to worry about it, and it's just kind of optimizing each for its console strength. It is that. Really quickly, Nintendo, I guess, rejected Binding of Isaac 3DS this week, according to the developers, based on the grounds of religious content.
I wouldn't say that. The thing, though, is the religious content in the Binding of Isaac is not the meat of the game, and it's like briefly mentioned, and then the game
is
about it. Yeah, it's an intro, and that's it.
From what I understand, this is coming from the developers. From what I've heard about the game, it doesn't seem like it's the religious content. It's the content of the game itself.
The rest of the game is messed up, and that's what sort of makes the Binding of Isaac. But I can understand if Nintendo rejected it because of that. But they decided to mention the religious content.
What I was going to say is that we don't know what Nintendo said exactly. This is what the developers are saying. I mean, it's kind of, I'm not saying they're lying, but it's a case of he says, she said. We don't necessarily know why they rejected it. It could have been a multitude of reasons, and that was the one they stuck out to them. Because from what I understand, there's like vaginas that shoot at you. There's like, I think part of his special move is just drive a spike through his head. So it seems like it's just a, I feel it's a good game, but it seems like it's overly grotesque.
But this is the problem, though, is Nintendo, they need to have, like, a rating system. They can use the ESRB, you know?
They do have a rating system.
Well, there you go. That's what the rating system is there for. You put,
I understand. This sounds like it would be an AO game.
You put it behind a parental lock. There you go, you know? And it's what every other platform on the planet does, you know?
Well, I was going to say, from what I understand, I don't think Sony nor Microsoft are going to accept this either. I mean, we'll see, because they're pitching it to Sony now, but I hear it's kind of the same situation with them, where it's just not the type of game that would fit in an M rating. I mean, we shall see how it goes with Sony. I hear that's where they're pitching it to next.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody has their own type of restrictions on their systems. I don't necessarily know why this one's a bigger deal than the rest, but it's out there. So there's that. Yes. What else do we have?
I suppose this kind of leads into the whole Steambox thing, because that broke out, I think, yesterday.
Yesterday, today. It's still continuing.
Yeah.
It's not
apparently, Valve is going to be announcing the Steambox, which is essentially, if you want to think about it, a console that runs Steam that's hooked up to your TV. And I don't know about this one. I'm not too sure that it's actually going to happen, because let's put it this way, there's a divide between what PC gamers want and what console gamers want. Console gamers want to be able to put the disc in and play the game, and PC gamers want to be able to, you know, tweak the games to have like these graphics or that shaders, or, you know, and they don't mind if they have to make sacrifices because they don't have this hardware, and, you know, they pay more, they expect more, right? And so the whole crux behind this Steambox thing is supposedly Valve saying, you know, we're going to make a console, but we're not going to make it open, we are going to make it open, and I don't think that people who are in that market care about that. And I think that if Valve are going to do it, then it's going to flop on a major scale.
See,
Interesting about it is like... Oh, you can go first, Sarah.
I was going to say, I mean, to me, it sounds like a great idea on paper. I get that they... But it kind of serves both purposes. If you want those high-end PC games, you still have a PC. But you can also, like, you can buy this, and, like, if you want to play on your TV screen, which is usually bigger than most people's monitors, you have that option. And if you're a console game, you kind of get a default PC box, and you can have cross platform play with people on PC.
But it would still have the problem of consoles where it would have out of date hardware, and if you've got a machine that's running Windows and this game on top of Windows, then you're going to have, because obviously games have higher requirements on PC than they do have consoles, even to get them to run at the same setting, because of all these, because the PC has extra overheads when it comes to.
But what if they strip the Windows out?
But that's what I'm saying.
But games won't work then.
But why not?
Then it won't work because developers would have to specifically rewrite their games.
What if they create it so that it's essentially a like locked down version? Like it'd be running Windows or something in the background. It's not like you could use it as a Windows machine. It's just kind of sandboxed into Steam.
Wait, does it need to run Windows?
You still have let's put it this way: in order for it to get the maximum game compatibility possible, it would need to run Windows. Because games on Linux barely exist, and games on Mac are still not popular amongst...
Yeah, but I mean...
I'm going off the assumption that entire Steam catalog...
Yeah, I think Steam works as its backbone.
But even if you have it, like, not Windows to be completely inaccessible, you're still going to have a lot of overheads on your hardware. And I don't understand, because the people who want to have Steam on their TV already do it. And Valve said that they were going to add in to Steam a, what they called it, like a big picture UI. So people who already do run Steam on their TVs in their living rooms can do so easier. And I can understand that, but I just don't think that coming out with this new hardware is going to fill any gap, because we've got the people who don't care about out-of-date hardware, they just want to play their games, and we've got the people that care about that stuff and have already got their PCs hooked into their TVs.
You know, yeah, I don't think it's going to try to bridge the gap where it's more targeted towards the console.
Yeah, I think there is a market for console gamers
than the PC necessarily type gamer.
Yeah, I think there are people who probably want an Xbox, and you kind of get a more high-end box here. So you kind of get that graphics of a PC. It's like giving PC developers a target to aim for, instead of just like developing for the common denominator, or the always common denominator in the consoles. I think it has potential. I see your fault with it, especially if we do end up with more console makers. But I think the integration between
and not
having
that is the games. The games, PC does not have exclusive games. It's simple as that. They don't exist. We've got the internet, but I don't see why anyone would go out and buy new hardware just for those, because otherwise build a PC, which may end up being cheaper than the Steam box, you know?
Well, I was going to say, people, they don't have exclusive games because I think PC is a kind of a niche market, but you can't say they don't. There's World of Warcraft, there's you know, there's like Diablo and stuff like that, which are huge games. I mean, it kind of took for The Witcher 2 to come out.
Yeah, but even then, they wouldn't. They and this is the other thing, is in order for a Steam box to work and have those kinds of games, you'd have to get Blizzard involved, and you know, Blizzard evidently don't want their games on Steam. Otherwise,
but do they though? Because Steam doesn't have Blizzard right now, and it's very successful.
As to say, you also have to look at Valve would have it, and if Valve does exclusive games just for PC, I could see that convincing a lot of people to buy this. Because if you want half,
but Valve, if Valve wanted to do that, then we wouldn't have the Orange Box and Left 4 Dead and Portal 2 on the console.
No, because that was before Valve had their own box. So what if Half-Life 3 is the launch title and it's only on Steam? So you either get it on Steam on a PC, or you get it on Steambox. And if you're a console gamer,
that would be a dick move. That would be.
Would it be a dick move? It's kind of the same way I think when people said that EA having Battlefield all on Origins was a dick move.
I still think it's a dick move.
If you want to launch your service, and you have games, that's what you do. You don't say it's a dick move when Microsoft doesn't port Halo over to the PS3, or when Nintendo doesn't have Mario on the Xbox.
But the Valve's whole idea is to be open and saying, no, you must use this if you want to play this game. It's not really being open about anything, is it?
I think you can still be open and closed at the same time. You can still give people the freedom, but it's like you have to use our device to play it.
You don't know this, but it's not a matter of, oh, I want to get my game on Steam. I just implement Steamworks and then tell Valve the game, and then they put it up there. Because there have been, I've seen quite a few stories lately of developers not being able to get their games on Steam because Valve have just said no. So it,
yeah, but we've just seen in the prior news story that happens on the consoles too.
Yeah,
so
but that's the point of the Steam box, is to get away from that. And yet Valve are already committing that crime on Steam, and they don't even have this hardware yet.
Well, I think it's a very hard position for any hardware maker, is that you want to kind of produce your thing, but you also don't want to. Because you got Apple, there's something like, what is it, they're going near like a million apps now, and we've seen this stuff like the Pokemon stuff that ships through the radar, which gets them in trouble because it's infringing on people's copyright. So you do kind of need some system. You can't just say whatever you want, you put on there. This is how you end up with shovelware.
Well, yeah, and none of this adds up to me. I don't understand any of it.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense.
I'd like to steer this conversation in a slightly different direction, because I think for me what's most exciting, for lack of a better word, about this is just, it has nothing, just ignoring you know, what Steam does, what Valve brings, what the market for this potential box would be, is the business model itself, and something I thought that Microsoft should always consider for the next Xbox, and that is, instead of having one box that the company makes, be it Sony, Microsoft, Valve, Nintendo, whatever, which is not what they're doing, they're creating a standard and saying, okay, this is the standard, you stick to the standard, we'll give you the Steam branding, and whoever wants to make a box that lives to these standards can have the Steam branding, have the Steam store, and access to the Steam games. And that's something...
That would be the more interesting thing.
That's what the rumors are talking about, and I think it's especially interesting because that's the difference between Windows and Mac. That's why Windows, well, obviously not as much recently, but that's how Windows became such a dominant platform on the PC, because Microsoft didn't say, we're going to make our own computer. Yeah. They said, we're going to make the standard and let other people make the hardware. And that way you get in all sorts of variations. You know, there's low-end, there's high-end, there's all this stuff. And it's not about that as much as the ecosystem, which has always been the thing with consoles that is kind of the advantage, so to speak, is you have the closed ecosystem. You know what to expect. It was what you were saying, Daniel, about you just put in the game and it works. And if you just have Valve define what the standard ecosystem is going to be, and maybe they update it every 3 to 4 years to reflect changing technology, that is something where the one console future suddenly becomes possible, because this is how it would happen.
That's Angry Carlos' theory of a one console future. Not so much that one company makes it, but
right.
It's one that everybody
is. And if this is really successful, who's to say that, you know, probably not in the next generation, but maybe 2 generations from now, maybe Valve and Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony come together and say, you know, it'll be beneficial to us if we just pull together, create a standard for what, I'm not saying this is going to happen, just that it could in some crazy world.
I see the potential for it, and I could see the possibility. But I think, as you both mentioned, I think the strength of a console development has always been that you've had one standard. But also from a consumer standpoint is that you don't always, you know, like you don't want to buy a game for Steamworks and like say you're three versions behind or somebody's catering to a higher end stuff. So you end up with something that kind of runs a bit buggy or laggy and stuff like that. Then, you know, you're kind of, you know, you're subdividing your user base.
Right. But I think the market's big enough to get over that. And we see that right now on the iOS platform. In PC platform, obviously, we see that too. But on the iOS platform, I think, is a more, you know, relatable example, because you do have essentially one standard. I mean, it's a little different because you don't have all these manufacturers making a device, but you have one standard. It gets updated from year to year, and from year to year, games will take advantage of the newer technology, but they'll still scale down to run on older technology.
Which is what PC games do a lot, too.
I mean, as a
counterpoint, you kind of had the Android thing, which I guess would be closer to
that. Right, and I think that's what Valve might try to avoid, where they don't want a completely open thing, because then you get market segregation and, you know, trouble updating and all that. But if they go somewhere in the middle, like, think of a Windows phone. Microsoft doesn't
have
a Windows phone. But just as an example, they made the operating system, and it's the in-between between iOS and Android, because you have a closed ecosystem but an open platform that anyone can make a phone. Well, I mean, you have to get licenses and stuff, but, you know, there's a variety of manufacturers that make a phone. They have a variety of specs and variety of price points. And I think, I'm not saying this is going to be a surefire success. I think I'm really interested to see how it works out.
I mean, granted, we need details in them to actually announce it.
Right,
but yeah,
exactly.
I think it does have potential, but it also, as Daniel pointed out, it can also kind of fall on its ass.
Yeah, I mean, it could definitely just totally flop. I mean, it is, it's too different to really say for sure what way it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, again, granted, we don't know details, but I'm just saying that it's, you know, there's so much that can go wrong, there's so much that can go right with it, and hopefully if they do announce it next week, we'll discuss it in greater detail when we have, you know, details about it to actually discuss. Yeah, it has potential, but you can only harp on a rumor for so long. And this will probably be the oddest thing to end this show on, well, to end news on, but there's a new Pac-Man 3D cartoon coming out next year.
Woohoo!
I can't wait until we get the new Legend of Zelda, the new Super Mario Brothers cartoons going.
You can get the new Super Mario Brothers live-action movie as well. Oh, wait, I mean the first one, because it doesn't exist, does it?
Yeah, or we can get Q-Bert back on TV. It's been a while for that guy, too.
He was on TV.
Yeah, Q-Bert had arcade games in the 80s had cartoons.
Oh.
This is back when, you know, video games were kind of new and people didn't know what to expect. So they would just
this is back when you were the only person on this panel alive.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. But yes, I was. Which is why I've seen so many of these things. I mentioned this before. I got into my first video game memories, Captain N, the Game Master. So a lot of people probably haven't even heard of that at this point. It doesn't even show up on TV anymore. But yeah, I'm kind of excited for it. I mean, video game cartoons for the most part have been really subpar. But they're enjoyable. I've heard good things about Kirby Right Back At Ya. I've heard decent things about Sonic X. And I don't think we've really had anything recently since then. But back in the 80s and 90s, they all had them Double Dragon, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, Mario,
the
Zelda. 90s
was the golden age.
Yeah, I think it was also kind of like, because the 80s were kind of built around toys, G.I. Joes, Transformers, stuff like that. And then the 90s was built around video games and action figures, Ninja Turtles. Oh, I guess I should say video games and comic book characters. Yes. Okay. And I think finally we have a question of the week. Does anybody else have a question this week? Or should I go on?
No, I don't.
It's your show.
Okay. Well, no. It's our show. I just happen to be around here every week. I like the question I asked week, but we didn't get to answer it, so I'll ask that again later on. But what is the most expensive game you own?
It depends on how you define expensive. Is it how much money you could spend on it? How much you have spent on it?
I would go with how much you.
The worst, the game that was the least value for money.
That'd be a good spin.
I mean, next week I had rarest game you own, and I think that because based on rarity, that can increase a game's value. But I guess market value, what you paid for it or what you could have paid for it. And I mean, I assume for this generation it's kind of cheating because the Out of the Rock Band games are up there.
Yeah, I was going to say Rock Band for me because, I mean, the first one where I bought all four instruments and I probably bought about $100 worth of DLC at least, so.
Yeah, the DLC is where they get you. I would go Rock Band 2, but I didn't buy it. I got it as a birthday gift, I think, for my 22nd. My friends got together at post-college and bought it for me. I feel bad because they got it. I used it like twice to play with them. I downloaded it, Still Alive from Portal, and that was the extent of my Rock Band. Same thing with my DJ Hero 2 set. Maybe 1 week we'll have a discussion about all the plastic stuff I own. Game console.
Oh, dear. The most expensive game I own is Call of Duty 4 because they kept releasing DLC packs and I kept buying them. That was until Black Ops, at least. I bought the Modern Warfare 2 pack map pack and I bought the Modern Warfare, the Black Ops map pack and the World at War map pack for it. So, yeah, Call of Duty 4. Or does that not count?
Okay. And DJ?
I think mine is Fallout 3 because I bought the collector's edition on launch, and then I got the gaming edition on Steam, and then I got the gaming edition on PS3. So I'm like 3 copies of it.
Okay. And I guess, you know, since we can also do that question this week, I think we've hinted at it before, but what is the game you own the most?
I've owned the most.
Okay, I know.
I don't know if I know any game, I own any game more than twice.
The game I own the most is Super Mario Bros. 3. I own the Nintendo version like 4 times. I own the Super Nintendo version like 2 times.
That game I've never played before.
Yes, I own the Game Boy Advance version. I own the Super Mario All-Stars Limited Edition that came out with Mario 25th Anniversary. and I don't have it on Wii Wear yet. I've been debating it, but I also have a working Super Nintendo and Nintendo behind me, so it defeats the purpose.
Mine would be Age of Empires 2. I've bought that in the expansion pack about 6 times. It's ridiculous. Why? I don't know. I'll just lose the copy, lose the game, and then I'll just buy it again. I mean, the game is the game has been out for 14 years, and Ensemble Studios isn't even around anymore. So the only person benefiting from me buying it is the person that's selling it. But who cares? I'll just buy another copy.
Have you tried the free to play one? I'm just curious.
Yes, it's not good. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I was just curious because I assume with PC games like you install it, but I assume in 14 years you probably.
Well, I could just get it off BitTorrent if I really wanted to, but no, I was just going to buy it again. And then every time I realise that it doesn't work on Windows 7 very well, that's the worst thing.
Wait, every time? How many times did you buy for Windows 7?
Since I got Windows 7, about 3 times, I think.
That's a fan.
At least for me, it was different systems, and the reason I own it multiple times on the same system is because I've gotten it multiple times when I've bought stuff. Jason?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm getting kind of pressed to think of a game that I own more than twice, but for games I own at least twice, there's Perfect Dark. I don't know, there's got to be a bunch. Knights of the Old Republic, Call of Duty 4, definitely some Mario games in there.
Except for Super Mario Brothers 3.
Except for the Super Mario Brothers 3. Super Mario Brothers 1.
I own that I had to.
Super Mario 64 I bought twice because I bought the 3DS or the DS version. Mario Kart 64 I bought twice.
Yeah, Ocarina of Time is probably the game I own the most that I've never beaten.
Oh, I guess you could say Pokemon Red / Blue and Gold / Silver since I bought both of those. Actually, Red, Blue, and Yellow, I bought all three, so.
Did you buy
the remakes? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Oh. You're not a true Pokemon fan. Get out of here.
No, I'm not anymore. I kind of burned out after a while. The last one I played was Diamond.
Yeah, that's the last Pokemon game I played.
I think Black and White's an interesting point to jump back in on. I think it does. You know, Pokemon is such a weird game. I think, and this happens with a lot of games, I think it's that people, if you're on a fan, you just kind of see it gets more of the same. But I think if you're a die, you kind of see like the changes they make. And I think Pokemon Black and White does a lot more gradual. It does a lot more than any other Pokemon before it. And I also like the triple team battles now.
Oh, there's but triple
four
team
of them.
Now?
Yeah, well, there's only about four of them in the entire game, but they're interesting.
Yeah, and they have two different types of triple team battles. They have one, which is rotation battle, which is a nice little twist. And they have, I think, just straight 3-on-3.
I'm kind of like, I'll probably jump back in when there's the 3DS, the inevitable 3DS one.
Yeah. What I don't like about it, and I've always wanted this since they've introduced 2-on-2 with Pokemon, is the ability to kind of combine attacks. Like if you have somebody
who you can do that to a certain extent. There are moves like Helping Hand, which do work. I mean, you can.
I meant more like if you have like a water Pokemon and you douse the opponent with water and then use electricity.
Oh yeah,
like
that's
damage.
Too complex for Pokemon. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it is, because then it defeats the whole rock, paper, scissors mentality.
The only real combo you've got going is you use Earthquake, which damages everybody except for the Pokemon using it, and you just get the other Pokemon on your team to just protect themselves.
Doesn't it not work against flying ones, though, too?
And it doesn't work against flying ones as well. That's true. But yeah, you can't really combo them together, I suppose.
Yeah. But yeah, we have Pokemon talk for the week. So yes, next week is GDC. Apparently Jason will be heading down there, so
woo-hoo!
He may not be joining us next week. Or maybe we'll hold up so that we can actually have someone who went to GDC to talk about it on.
Yeah, we'll see. I might be able to make the show, or we can do a late show, or we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I've never talked about my New York Comic Con stuff here, even though I've gone like 2 years. Yeah, so I want to thank DJ for joining us. You know, check out the site, hopefully, you know, the 50 or so articles that we have for it. Okay, I just wanted to make it clear on this show real quick that sometimes you post fictitious or satirical articles. It's kind of, I realize that some people get pissed off now because they don't realize it's not supposed to be taken seriously, which I think is the entire point. Like, if you make it so that it's obviously a joke, nobody's going to buy it, but if it's kind of possible, that's kind of what we're making fun of. We shall see. I just had that issue twice this week, so I just wanted to point that out. So yes, for Jason, DJ, Daniel, myself, this has been Dual World in 60 and a half.
The not lost episode.
The not lost episode. It's hope.
Hopefully. Might be too soon to say.